Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
On today's Patriot Nation podcast, we are joined by the voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soucy. We talk, obviously, the Patriots and the path to the playoffs and how the Patriots have revitalized their season, what it's going to look like this year and moving forward. It's a heck of a conversation, as it always is with Bob. So buckle up and cue the music.
Stack receivers, two to the right. Russell Wilson extends the hands he has. Wilson, quick throw. And it's good. Intercepted. Intercepted by Malcolm Butler. Butler has it at the one. Malcolm Butler stepped in front of the throw. And the Patriots have possession with 20 seconds to go.
All right, Spags, we are back, and I got some news. I got some interesting news yesterday. Well, it's not really news, but I'm a year out from my surgery.
That's right.
Yeah, I had my...
Good for you.
Wednesday was my 1 year. I had my meeting with the doctors, and down 95 and a half pounds since in 1 year.
Hey. You might be the only one having a good 2020 or the last year, but hey, for as long as I've known you, I'm happy for you. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that is awesome, right?
It's unbelievable.
Cool accomplishment for you and everybody else involved. And yeah, you should be proud of yourself. Like I said, you might be the only one who can look back on this past year and say, wow, it's been pretty positive, right?
Yeah, it's wild. You're looking at old pictures, I'm like, you know, someone will send me a picture and I'm like, oh my God, that was me? And they're like, yeah, I'm like, whoa, okay.
Same here.
It's a big
one
difference.
For my grad party is so different too.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. So we've shared some of those on there, you know what I mean? On Twitter and whatnot. But yeah, it's been a year. It's been a year, that's for sure. You know, and we'll see what happens, you know. But anyways, we great show coming up with Bob Soucy, obviously voice of the Patriots, and I think, you know, we get into it with him, but I mean, they're not dead. They're not dead, man. We were talking about like the season's over and let's tank and this and then all of a sudden it's like,
what
hey.
A difference in a week makes with us. I mean, our conversation last week, looking forward to next year and everything. And,
yep.
You know, it's interesting. You know, they hold the tiebreaker versus Baltimore, Vegas, mm-hmm. Miami, who are all 6-3 ahead of them. And then, you know, sprinkle in Indianapolis and Tennessee. One of them is going to be a division winner. You know, they're going to beat up on each other. So I think for the Patriots and our fans, take it 1 week at a time. I mean, we're here. We're on the hump. If they get to 500, it's kind of a breath of fresh air. And, hey, let's roll. You got Arizona who's struggling tonight. And, you know, I know Kyler Murray's doing some crazy things. I think they'll have some problems, not to look too far down the road. But, hey, one play at a time, 1 yard at a time. Let's cherish it. Because, like I said, what a difference a week and a half, 2 weeks makes, really 6 quarters makes, because we're back in it now.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, you think about, I think back to Levin Reed when we had Levin on after the Buffalo game, we're like, they're 2-5 and the season's over and what are we going to do and this and that. And I remember he said, they get to 5-6 as a shot. And that meant that they had to win three out of the next four. They've already won two of those games. So if they win on Sunday, now they've already won those three. Even if they lose to Arizona, you're still at that 5-6 mark, and you have a chance moving forward. You know, I think that's really the spot. And I think this is an interesting week because I don't want to say it's a trap game, because in the NFL, certainly with the Patriots, they don't take anyone lightly. They really try, and you heard Belichick, you know, heaping praise on this Texans team this week. But, you know, obviously we're looking forward to Arizona next week. That's going to be a tough matchup, as we know. But, you know, it's no joke. You got to win this Texans game. You have to win this Texans game. And so it's a game where, you know, they should win. They're the better team. But, like, there's still some concern. You go on the road into Houston. And so it's a big game this week.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, their record does not kind of show who they are. Have had some tough losses, but they're 0-7 versus teams not named the Jacksonville Jaguars. So
crazy.
Come on, Patriots, don't take one step, two steps forward and one back. Let's hold on here and keep this train moving. I think they're trending in the right direction the last, you know, few weeks.
For sure, for sure. Makes you feel a lot better. So anyways, we're going to get right into the interview with Bob Soucy. As always, just a fantastic guy, one of the best guys in the industry, and has graciously come on again with us, and we appreciate that. And obviously, you can hear him on every Sunday, you know, with the call again, well, Sunday or Monday, depending on when they play, with the call of the Patriots game. And so, you know, give him a listen, and we will talk to you guys next week. All right, we are extremely pleased to welcome on a guy who has been on before. We love him. He is the voice of the Patriots, and a great job of it he does. Bob Soucy. Bob, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it, man.
Hey, it's good to be with you again, Pat and Ryan. And if you love having me on, you know, I got to say I love being on. Flattery will, you know, will get me to come on anytime. So I appreciate that very much.
Absolutely. So, you know, obviously we had Ravens game last week, and it was what a win for them. Obviously the weather and everything else and blah, blah, you know, people can make excuses as to why the Patriots won and the Ravens lost and everything else. But it was a game, frankly, that the Patriots again were 7-point underdogs at home, which hadn't happened since, I believe, 2002, which is crazy to think about. And of course they win. And now it seems like now there's a path for them to get into the playoffs. And listen, six quarters ago at halftime of the Jets game, down 20-10 against the New York friggin' Jets, it was like the season's over. We're done. Cancel everything. And now 6 quarters later, we're talking about maybe being in the playoffs. It's a wild time to be a Patriots fan.
Yeah, there have been, you know, so many swings of the pendulum this season. From week one, all the excitement about the running game, right, and Cam's performance. And then even after the loss in Seattle, the way the Patriots threw the ball, particularly downfield against the Seahawks. And then the Patriots go through the bout with COVID and the outbreak after Cam tests positive. And there's the uncertainty before going out to Kansas City and playing that game the way they did and losing it as they did. Uncharacteristic mistakes. The veteran quarterback Brian Hoyer and Newton Stead, you know, making a couple of mental and physical errors that really cost the Patriots points that would have given them the opportunity to come away from Kansas City with a remarkable win under those circumstances. Then there's the long layoff from practice, of course, the postponement of the Denver game, the loss to Denver, which was really surprising, if not stunning, I think, to most, if not all of us. Followed by, of course, you know, really a very disappointing performance, to put it very mildly, against San Francisco. Not just the outcome, but the effort and the way the game unfolded from start to finish. Yeah. And then the Patriots, you know, were right there with Buffalo. Cam turns the ball over on that final possession, infield goal range, and they've got to come back, as you mentioned, 6 quarters ago against the Jets, down 10 versus a winless team, but still the division foe, and still against a quarterback who's had some success against the Patriots, of course, on a big stage as a member of the Ravens, and a coach who's had success while he was in Miami against the Patriots, speaking of Adam Gase, despite his problems in New York. And yeah, after that win, a lot of people still doubting the Patriots, and then here we are after the win over the Ravens. And to your point about the weather, certainly the Ravens were affected when you look at some of the poor snaps. But that being said, you know, the Ravens are really built to play in conditions like that. And you look at the matchup going in, regardless of the weather, wind, and rain, still it seemed to be a favorable matchup for Baltimore. But I think what we saw with the Patriots' use of some personnel, including some of the young guys, and what we saw with the Patriots playing mistake-free football, that to me is the most encouraging thing about the last two games, but particularly in those conditions against the Ravens. And I think as much as you could say, well, the weather helped the Patriots because the Ravens play poorly, well, the weather could have hurt the Patriots just as easily. And they've been a team that's been prone to mistakes, and they were going up against a team that thrives off turnovers like Baltimore does. So to me, when I look at the last couple of games and to your point about a playoff run, if the Patriots are going to mount a playoff run, and they got to get to 500 first this weekend, of course, they're going in the right direction because it starts with playing mistake-free football, not giving the ball away, not making some of the mental errors we've seen at times this year.
And Bob, and obviously you're there, right? And you see the impact of obviously no fans. It must be so weird in there, looking around at Gillette, which you've seen for years, with just being filled with people and how hard it is to win there despite who's coming to town. Do you think that's had any impact on them? I mean, obviously they drop one versus Denver, San Francisco at home, which is so uncharacteristic of them. I guess, does that kind of give them, doesn't give them the best advantage, right? I mean, that's such a tough place to play. And then all of a sudden you got to come in. Obviously there's some fans at some games, and I still don't think it has too much of an impact because obviously nobody's at full capacity, but coming to Gillette is a lot different this year than in years past.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there is validity to that. Of course, every team is playing with either a smaller crowd than usual or no fans at all. So I think the home field advantage has been diminished, if not negated outright this year in the NFL. For example, and I don't know if it's just coincidence, but the Thursday night games, I think the records of road teams are a lot better this year than they've been in the past on the short weeks, which is interesting because it's still a short week and you still have to turn around and get on a plane and travel to the home destination. But, you know, that record reflects that there is less of a home field advantage, at least in that situation. And we've seen other teams around the league go on the road and win impressively. And I think you're right. It's, you have to generate your own energy. When players have talked about it, they've really compared it to being out on the practice field. And I think Belichick said it right away this year, either week one or week two, you know, what's it like when you're not playing in front of any fans and it's a good practice. And then it is bizarre. And I think, you know, from the broadcaster standpoint or someone going there to cover the games, it's so strange to drive down Route 1. And in some ways, it's welcome. There's not a lot of traffic. But it's so strange to be going to the stadium and not see trucks and cars with their flags or, you know, grills on the back on a flatbed heading down Route 1, one after the other, trying to get into the parking lots for the tailgating and then pulling into the parking lot and seeing, you know, all the cars already set up. The tailgaters have got their tents and chairs out, ready to go, the grills fired up, the stage and the music playing in the Hall of Fame Plaza area near Patriot Place. There's none of that. And you go into the stadium and you walk in there and there's a handful of security people and stadium staff. There's media scattered around, of course, all socially distanced and wearing masks. You can't get down to the field. You go into the broadcast booth. Everybody kind of stays in their own booth, and not nearly as many people are in that area where I work for home games. And it is. And the team comes out of the tunnel, and they come charging down the sideline like they always did the past. And Julian Edelman would lead the team into the corner of the end zone, and the fans would be going crazy, be pumping his fist. You see guys coming out, and you hear like the sounds of the machine that makes the smoke when they come charging out of the tunnel. You know, shoo, shoo. You know, and then they run down to the other end of the stadium in the end zone, and there's nobody there. There's nobody there to greet them. So it is strange. And I think, like, you know, you look at the game like against Denver and maybe the game against San Francisco to a lesser degree, maybe having a home crowd would have really gotten them over the hump. The Niners came in there and dominated. But a game like Denver, yeah, I think it certainly could have helped. That being said, you know, when the Patriots go on the road against Houston, there's not going to be a full house in NRG Stadium, so maybe it helps them.
That's true. Yeah. No, it's funny with the, you know, Spags being a first year season ticket holder and not going to a game is tough. And of course, you know, this is going to be my first year not going to a Patriots game since 1992. And so, you know, when I was 8 years old, this is the last time I didn't go to a Patriots game. So it's definitely a strange feeling not being in the stadium every week. And, you know, not just, and it's not just the game, of course, like you said, it's the tailgate before, it's the hanging out, it's the, you know, we go whatever, you know, you do all the stuff. I get in like an hour before and I'm watching pregame and I'm watching, and like, there's so much stuff that you miss because you can just watch it on TV, and that's a challenge. So, but you were talking about the road games. Are you guys not traveling with the team, right? Are you recording everything from Gillette? Even the road games?
Yeah, we are broadcasting. We're in our radio booth, home and away, from Gillette Stadium every game. And when we go in for the road games, obviously it's even more eerie. Sometimes it's chilly, you know, like you're in the Twilight Zone or Bizarro World, because we'll walk in there for a night game, for example, and the Revolution Youth Program, they're under 18, under 16 teams, et cetera, they'll be out on the field practicing. So we go into the broadcast booth to call the Patriots game off the television monitors in the booth from Seattle or Kansas City, and there's a soccer practice taking place out in front of us. There wasn't that the night the Patriots played the Jets. But, yeah, we go in there, and we have a setup with two TV monitors each. One of them has the TV feed that you see from CBS, Fox, or ESPN, and the other has the so-called All-22. It's a high sideline view so you can see the entire field. We get a mix of some of the effects of the players, you know, the shoulder pads popping and whatnot from the stadium, and that's mixed in with some recorded crowd noise. And we go to work from the home broadcast booth, again, when the Patriots are on the road. And when we leave, it's a dark and almost completely barren stadium, just a very small skeleton staff of security people. It's really bizarre.
And that's got to be really challenging for you guys, you know, as broadcasters, because, you know, typically the game is happening in front of you and you can see, and of course you have the All-22, so you can see what's going on, but it's not the same as it being in front of you. And so that's got to be a real challenge. Have you done anything like that before in the past where you're calling a live game, but not actually there? I feel like that's going to be really challenging.
I think the last time I probably did was when I was a kid in my basement watching games on TV.
Like we all do.
Yeah. You know, I will say this. I don't want to give any program directors or executive producers out there, you know, for budgetary reasons, any ideas in the future. But it's not as bad as I feared it would be to this point in terms of the challenge, actually. So far for us, the handful of games we've had on the road, it's gone relatively smoothly in terms of the technical setup. Now, that's I have a colleague, for example, in Buffalo, John Murphy, who got caught in a bind because their second game they were playing in Miami, and lightning struck the CBS truck.
Oh, baby.
Or at least lightning struck nearby and it knocked out the power to the CBS truck. So CBS lost its television feed from the Dolphins-Bills game, which meant that broadcasting back in Buffalo, they couldn't watch the game. So he had to try to call or at least relay the play-by-play off the internet, what he was getting on the NFL GSIS system, which is the in-house stats service that the NFL provides for media during the games. It's really the same as like an ESPN Gamecast. That's how he was calling the game. He would wait for the update play after play. It was like an old-time baseball announcer recreating games. When announcers didn't travel to road games. So it could be a lot more challenging than it's been for us thus far. But the strangest part of it, as I said, is kind of going into this an empty stadium and you're trying to generate your own energy. You're calling the game off TV and you hear some crowd noise. Again, it's recorded in the headset. And once the game gets going, you really try to focus. But one of the things about broadcasting live events is that, at least in my case, I feel like the announcer feeds off the energy of the crowd. We always keep our windows open in our booth, however cold it is, because we want to feel the game. We want to have that energy from the fans and be able to draw off it. And it really does make a difference, especially, you know, working with Scott Zolak, because he plays to the crowd.
I was going to say, he goes nuts. You guys are a good mix.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a big part of what we do. And I hate the fact that there aren't fans. I hate the fact that there aren't, you know, the full complement of stadium staff. It's one of the things that I always enjoy about going to the stadium is walking in early and seeing the stadium come to life on a game day. And, yeah. You know, walking around the field and seeing some of the security people or some of the other stadium staff, the elevator attendants, the press box attendants you see week after week, people in the dining room that are there game after game. And there's none of that interaction. And even when you see some of your colleagues now, there's very little chatter because we're all wearing masks and we're all trying to be respectful of one of another's spaces.
Right. That's crazy.
It is. And like I said, you and Scott do a great job. You can definitely feel the energy when you listen on the radio, and it's great. But moving on to Houston, obviously we kind of talked about the path for them to make the playoffs. Obviously it's 1 week at a time for the Patriots. It starts this week now, trying to get back to 500 versus a lesser opponent, obviously, who Belichick gave a lot of praise to this week in his press conference. Definitely have some talent. I don't think their record, shows what type of team they are. Obviously, you have six teams at 6-3. Two of them are in the same division, so you know one of them could knock each other out, with being Indianapolis and Tennessee. And then, obviously, you know, you have the tiebreaker versus Vegas, Miami, and I'm blanking on another one. Who's the other team?
And the Ravens.
Baltimore.
You have the tiebreaker against Baltimore.
Right, too. So, and obviously we have Miami, one more time here to close out, I believe, in week 16. So, I guess, heading into Houston, What have you seen the last, I guess, 2 weeks that's really turned this season around? I think, you know, Chase Winovich was unbelievable on Sunday night. The offense was good when it had to be, but it really started with that defense. It seems like they're starting to come to fruition and really get, you know, find their identity as a unit as we move on here, as the weeks continue to pile up.
Yeah, they were really hamstrung by the personnel losses to start the year, right? The free agency departures of Van Noy and Collins, Landon Roberts, Danny Shelton going as well, and then the opt-outs with Hightower and Chang. Yep. And it's a reminder of just how valuable, for example, Dante Hightower is. I think he's one of the more underappreciated standout athletes in our region, certainly one of the great Patriots of this dynastic run that they've enjoyed the last 20 years. But you look at the inability to stop the run, for example, and just how dominant San Francisco was in particular, and then the Bills as well. And Buffalo at that point in time was really trying to generate a running game. They were not running it well until they played the Patriots. And then to see the way the Pats played against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, and you mentioned Chase Winovich, his snap count had been down in recent weeks. Went back up a bit against the Jets, and then you really had an amplified role last Sunday versus the Ravens. And they used him a bit off the ball. They used him on the edge. Kyle Duggar's play, I think, very encouraging, the aggressiveness that he showed. And the run force from a guy like Duggar coming up and taking care of the edge at times, along with even Jason McCourty, who did that, a really key play as well in that game to set up a fourth down failed attempt by the Ravens. I think with Carl Davis on the interior, Lawrence Guy back, you know, that gives them some beef, some bulk up front that they really need. It's a matter of being light up front in terms of size, but also sheer numbers of people in the front seven, I think, that's really hampered the defense for a good part of this year. The secondary is still a strength. They've given up a lot of big plays. They didn't do that against Baltimore. When the Ravens did look to take their shots downfield, McCourty blanketed Hollywood Brown on that first possession. Yep. Later, J.C. Jackson comes up with the interception when the Ravens are in scoring range, or at least about to be in scoring range before the end of the first half. I think that's really encouraging. They've got to be able to do that, however, I think, against a much more dangerous team throwing the ball downfield on Sunday, because Deshaun Watson will keep plays alive. We know how talented he is. We saw it here at Gillette several years ago when he nearly led the Texans to a win only because of a Brandon Cooks touchdown catch in the final seconds, and then kind of mismanaging the clock on that final possession for Houston. They didn't get a chance to to beat the Patriots that day. And then last year, he had a great day against the Patriots. I think 3 touchdown passes, and he caught a touchdown pass. And there is no DeAndre Hopkins, but Will Fuller, Randall Cobb, Kenny Stills, the 2 tight ends that they have. I mean, there are still some problems the Patriots are going to have to contend with. Now, Houston's not running the ball very well this year, and they're not defending the run very well this year. Their defense is not what it's been. And some of those guys who were really good players for them are kind of on the downslope. Secondary hasn't been as good. Roby's been in and out of the lineup. He got suspended for a game a couple of weeks ago as their top cornerback. But so he's always played well against the Patriots. And the Texans are like a division foe. They're so familiar with the Pats. I think since I started calling the games, this will be the 8th meeting of the Patriots and the Texans, you know, going back to 2013. So there's that institutional familiarity because you got a lot of Patriot influences there and former Patriots. But then there's just that familiarity of playing against one another. And I know it's not Tom Brady, it's Cam Newton, but it's still, you know, the Patriots in Houston. A lot of those guys have practiced against the Pats in the recent past and played against them, as I said.
No, for sure. You're right. And speaking of the secondary, you know, a guy who's been out for really an extended period of time, a lot longer than I think people had expected when he went out, was Stephon Gilmore. And, you know, there, of course, there were rumors swirling about him being traded, which, of course, didn't happen. Have you heard anything about him? Does it look like he's going to come back this week? And, you know, it just seems like a weird situation that he just seems to me like he's been out longer than I had anticipated him being out. And I think it really helped them this week, especially like you said, with an explosive offense like Houston, to have another guy back there. And J.C. Jackson's been playing great, has an interception, I think, in 4 straight games. So he's playing very well. But you know, having Stephon Gilmore would be pretty nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what makes a lot of people raise questions now with this absence is what took place earlier in the year. You know, the salary bump reports that Gilmore wasn't happy going into training camp, and later reports that Gilmore didn't fully participate in the voluntary activities, albeit they were virtual. And there's a sense that he was dissatisfied with the situation. That's been reported and certainly widely discussed locally. And then he gets off to really a substandard start from him, defensive pass interference penalties, getting beat, granted, against DK Metcalf, who's really, really talented. Yeah. But nonetheless, getting beat in ways we didn't see in the last couple of years, at least not since the early part of 2017, as I think about it, because Gilmore did have a period of adjustment when he signed with the Patriots that first month or so. But after that, it was you know, shut down city. So I think that, you know, some people wondered, well, you know, is his play reflective of, you know, something different with his attitude? And then the Niners game, I think, was a game in which a lot of people questioned effort at times. And I think that he did legitimately get hurt. I think there's no reason to doubt that. I don't have any reason to think that he's out because he doesn't want to be out there. I think that Belichick talked the other day about, you know, going through some tests with him and Julian, you know, making sure that they were ready to actually start practicing, to start the clock on them. So I don't have any extra insight into his situation for this weekend. Edelman, it doesn't look like he's going to play this weekend, but I think a return for him next week would be sooner than expected. And I think if that happens, that's going to be a really welcomed addition
really
for
nice.
Them. Yeah, both of those guys. And if they don't get Gilmore back this week, then, you know, and if there is any doubt, to me, you know, the Arizona game, you're going from the Texans to the Cardinals with those receivers.
Yeah.
You know, either way, they're going to need him. So, you know, we'll see. But I do think a lot of it is because of what happened early in the year. And, you know, hopefully when he does come back, he's good. If he's playing for a better salary here or elsewhere next year, you know, and again, he's at that age now where automatically teams look at you differently because you passed
exactly.
that 30-year-old mark. You know, he's got a lot to play for if he does come back, whether or not he was satisfied with his contract going into the season.
For sure. Yeah.
And Bob, fast forwarding to next year, I know it's hard to stay in the moment these days, but I think it's an interesting conversation where we can kind of go to kind of wrap up here. And it's interesting in a lot of ways. The quarterback position, right? I think it's changing each week. I think Cam is starting to find his groove again and getting more comfortable. He's certainly been one of the more elite quarterbacks over the last three games. Even that Jets game was shaky from a defensive standpoint, but I think he was very good. He was really good last week. And then obviously Buffalo minus the fumble was, I thought, one of his better games of the year. Going into next year, it's an interesting, obviously, it's looking like they're not going to at least originally pick inside the top 10 to get one of those, you know, and I don't think it was possible to begin with at all. Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence or even Zach Wilson now at BYU, who's kind of jumping Trey Lance from South Dakota State. Is it going to be Cam Newton here? I think it's an interesting question what his price tag will be. Obviously, you see Bill Belichick has praised him even before he was here. He spoke about his leadership the other day. We've seen Cam be super accountable and really been a leader, and I think open a lot of eyes and change a lot of people's opinions on him as he's been here. I guess it's interesting what his price tag would be. Will he be the type of guy that they'll give, you know, a 2 to 40, 45? Obviously, the guarantees can mix in there. We don't have to get into those. And then, you know, draft a guy early on and develop him. Obviously, this offseason, it was the Jared Stidham show till late June. And it's been a whirlwind there since Tom left. And I'm curious to hear your perspective on kind of which direction they may go. And honestly, we might not know yet.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think a couple of things. Number one, the more I think about it, and it's, you know, maybe unless you've actually gone through it, you wouldn't understand the difficulty of it. Coming in as a quarterback in the NFL, going to an entirely new organization with an entirely different offense,
yeah,
and doing it in July on the doorstep of training camp with no spring, no OTAs, no passing camp. He didn't even have the opportunity to dive into to the playbook back in the spring. So he wasn't even participating in the virtual OTAs like the other quarterbacks were. And then right. He signs in July, and it's a truncated training camp, fewer practices than usual because they had that ramp up, which is a lot of conditioning and walkthroughs before they actually started practicing, no preseason games. It's a lot to ask even for a 10-year guy coming off a couple of injury riddled seasons. It's a lot to ask of any quarterback to come into that role and look like, you know, he belongs in that system right away and is comfortable and confident in that system. And it started well. The Patriots ran the ball well against the Dolphins, and then he passed it well against Seattle. But then you think about the COVID situation, and he was asked today if the so-called COVID fog might have affected his processing at the line of scrimmage. He talked about, you know, he had struggled pre-snap and so forth. He said, no, that wasn't it. But you have to wonder, along left, not practicing, you know, not participating day after day in walkthroughs and running the offense and being out there in the practice field for a couple of weeks, how much of a setback that was and how the offense, instead of evolving, kind of had to go back to square one. And then his mechanics got thrown out of whack, and he really did struggle. He looked like he was not confident. He certainly didn't make good decisions. Yeah. Looked like he was really unsure of himself for that stretch of time. Now, as you said, Ryan, he's coming back and playing a lot better. And I look at the options potentially for 2021. What are his options? What are the Patriots' options? The Patriots got him on a one-year deal for the veterans minimum plus incentives. Who out there is going to give him, you know, a lucrative deal for 2021? Hey, unless he plays, you know, lights out from here on out. But if he's healthy and he continues to progress, I can see a situation where both Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels say, look, we really like this guy. You know, our players took to him. They really responded to his leadership. We saw a lot of positive signs. We'd like to work with him for an entire off season and spring. And maybe, you know, he can be the guy that gets us to the next quarterback rather than trying to find somebody else. Because to me, I think you're right. They're not in a position where they're going to get the franchise quarterback to come in and play on day one in 2021. And I don't think they're in a situation where they're going to shower somebody else with a ton of money and acquire a free agent or at least a quarterback who's on another team who will command a big contract to play in New England. So I just think that the way things have shaped up for both Cam personally and for the Patriots collectively, it makes a lot of sense at this point.
Yeah,
again, and there's
sure.
a huge if there. If he stays healthy and if he continues to improve,
right. yeah.
then I think, you know, he may be very well the best option they have. I don't think you want to get in a situation where you're constantly bringing guys in year after year. And I certainly don't think you want to be in a situation for the pro-tank crowd where you intentionally lose games, but you're not there to get the sure thing. And there's very rarely a sure thing. Trevor Lawrence is probably the only thing in this draft, it's a sure thing. Because so many other teams, you know, they find themselves desperately needing a quarterback and they reach and they take the wrong guy.
Washington, for example, with Haskins recently.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's an example of that, like, if not a couple of examples of that almost every year.
And there's so much of it where, you know, the Patriots just by the way of their nature, in the fact that they have a lot of young talent, they have a great coach, you know, they have a great coaching staff. They're not in a position where they're going to be bad enough to get a top three pick, no matter who's playing quarterback for them, really. I mean, you know, and so that becomes a difficulty because, like, okay, you want to stink. Well, that's fine. But it's like, what are you going to do? You're going to trade everyone and then, you know, cut everyone. And then what? Like, then you got to pray that the guy you drafted number one is the guy. And what if he isn't, you know? And so, like, that's, yeah. a really risky route to take. And I think something that Belichick has publicly said, I remember back when Manning got hurt and, you know, Indy had the whole suck for luck thing. And he ripped them apart saying, you know, we would never be in a situation like that where our backup quarterback couldn't at least, you know, competently play. And of course that wasn't the exact quote, but it, you know, paraphrasing him, of course, like he doesn't want to be in a position where he's going to have to tank. And I don't think that he wants that. And so it's going to be interesting to see.
He would never do that. No.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing.
And
I don't think
the ownership would ever look
for
that either.
No, they don't. They don't. So that's the interesting thing, is that to see what Cam, if he can continue to improve and continue to play the way he's been playing. And then what's going to be interesting is, like, what if Dak doesn't re-sign with the Cowboys? What if Jimmy G gets let go by San Francisco? What if other guys, you know, so, like, that's going to be where it becomes interesting, where if there are other guys available. And shoot, maybe some of these quarterbacks that the Patriots like end up slipping in the draft a little bit. They end up with a top 20 pick and they get someone. Hey, if that happens, great, but you're already set up. You know, you can't plan for that at the beginning of free agency because it's a month before the draft starts. So, you know, that's something where they're going to have to make that decision before the draft happens. And so it's going to be really interesting to see. I think that, you know, we here, very pro Stidham. But, you know, Cam is, and I've had this conversation with a bunch of people, like, not that I disliked Cam before, not that I had a really bad, a poor opinion of him, but Cam is a type of guy who my opinion of him has changed with him being here. I didn't realize the professional that he was and how humble he is and how much, you know, he really kind of, he's just a leader on and off the field. And he brings this attitude to, you know, press conferences and to where it's incredibly impressive. And it's something from far away. I just didn't realize, I just didn't see it. And so of course you see the flashy dressing and everything else like that. And so, you know, you kind of get this image in your head and then he comes here and you're like, oh my God, this guy is like the true, like a consummate pro. And like, you can see why all of his teammates love him.
And one thing too is he's an alpha male, which that they lost, you know, comes into a locker room, he lights up the room, something that they had for so long with Tom. When you lose that's hard for a locker room. He's that guy who comes in. I mean, Belichick said it on I think it was Tuesday, how every teammate knows him. He gets to know everybody. You know, he's loose. He's like a big brother to everybody. I think that's so important, especially for a team like this, where they have so much youth and at some key spots where they can kind of use him as a resource. And I think he's come in and done such a great job, obviously coming in late and kind of taking over and making it his team. It's not easy. And he's made it look pretty easy.
Yeah. Ryan, and you've been on a team and you coach a team. You've been on a team at the college level. So you understand the dynamics in the locker room. And I think particularly in football, and especially at that particular position, you have to have a guy that comes in and commands the room and that everybody rallies around and believes is the right guy for the job. And I think there's no doubt from day one. And when Pat talks about the consistent work ethic and the consistent energy, you saw that at training camp. We saw that, those of us who had an opportunity, the few of us to attend the practices that were open to the media, every day. He's very vocal. It's a completely different style of leadership than Tom Brady exhibited, at least publicly out on the field. Cam is more of a cheerleader, and you know, there's a lot of singing and a lot of jawing. Brady would definitely talk a lot with his teammates as well, but it's that personality, that energy was evident every day as soon as he came out on the field, and from that moment on until the time he left. And you hear the stories from teammates and the coaches about how he's an early guy in and he's a late guy out, and he's been consistent with his work ethic, the accountability with which he spoke during some really difficult times, and the honesty in terms of his own assessment of his play. I think a lot of people around here have been surprised, because I think, you know, you're right. You have a tendency, I think, to look at somebody and say flashy dresser, at least a lot of people do. And I wonder what, you know, is there substance to go with the style, really? And when he left, some of the social media messaging that I saw from people like Christian McCaffrey and Greg Olson and some of the other rock solid longtime Carolina Panthers told me, you know, this guy, this teammates loved him. Ron Rivera loved him. You know, this guy is going to fit in here better than a lot of people think, because a lot of people wonder, well, how is he going to be able to play for Bill Belichick? Cam is an extremely bright guy, and on and off the field, his football IQ, and he's always, wherever he's been, it's been a short stint at Florida, but then a short stint in junior college. He sucked it up and went to the middle of Texas near Cal Paddy's, led his junior college to the national championship. Then he goes to Auburn. 1 year, he's the captain. He leads them, carries that team on his back to the national championship, and goes to the NFL, and right away, he's the rookie of the year. And the Panthers, you know, with his leadership at the quarterback spot, you know, they were a team whose coach was on the verge of being fired. And they, you know, in a division where the division leader tended to turn over every year, I mean, Carolina was the most consistent team in the NFC South for a period of 4 or 5 years there with Rivera coaching and Newton at quarterback, including the 15-1 season, of course, when they lost to the Broncos in the Super Bowl. So, you know, I think when you look back on it and try to do it a little more objectively, and again, maybe we shouldn't be surprised based on what a lot of the Carolina Panthers who were with him said about him. But I've been surprised just the way he's handled the ups and downs so consistently. And, you know, again, I think that he seems to me to be the kind of guy, and I know, like, in sports talk radio around here, we're always searching, well, what's the ulterior motive? Why are Bill and Josh stroking him so much these days? You know, what are they trying to do? They try to get him on the cheap for next year, try to keep motivated, whatever it might be. But I do think that, you know, there's enough reason to believe that, you know, he's a guy that they would strongly, I think, consider moving forward. Again, with Belichick, it's always got to be the right deal. But nonetheless, the kind of guy they would want to work with. And, you know, to your point as well about young players, and there's been so much discussion, and it's fair to criticize some of the draft classes and to question some of the draft classes in the past. But there's so much discussion about the young players on this team. And last week I was on Felgrim Maz, and Tony Maserati asked me, are there young players to build around? And I do think that there's young talent on this team. The last two draft classes, I think, have a potential to be really productive for the Patriots for the next few years. Now, the 16-17 classes, the first picks from 14 and 15, you can go back and look at those drafts, some of the second-round picks through the years, the Jordan Richards, the Duke Dawsons. There's more than enough reason and evidence to question some of those classes. Now, you got to keep in mind, too, like some of those drafts were at a point in time, particularly in that stretch of the three Super Bowls in 5 years, when there weren't going to be a lot of guys to make the team anyway.
Right.
And now you look back on it as they transition from an old roster, the oldest in the league last year, to try to be a younger team. And now there's a lot of more holes are evident. And I don't think it's just the departure of the quarterback. So to me, I look at, like, okay, N'Keal Harry thus far has not worked out. And people are always going to judge the 2019 draft class based on him. There will be a certain segment of people who will do that. But there are some young players out of that draft. Because how many people killed them for drafting Damian Harris because he didn't play at all last year.
Yep.
And now look at him. And some of those same people are saying, oh, I love this guy. Yeah, I think Winovich has the potential. If he continues to develop into an all-around defensive player, to be a real good player for them. I think there's some other guys from last year's draft class that have potential. I think from this
Jacoby
year,
Myers.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? You know, as an undrafted guy from last year, but you know, he's still part of that class, no question about it. And then I look at like this year. The tight ends have not worked out, and that looks bad. But the two rookies, again, no spring on the field, unusual circumstances. Right now they're dealing with a couple of injuries with Asiasi and Keane. But their careers aren't over, and you know, they're going to have an opportunity to develop, especially with an offseason in the program. And the same goes for some other guys. But they've already found a starting offensive lineman, a guy that, you know, very few people thought could play tackle in the NFL, and he's been phenomenal thus far, Michael Olenu. And then Justin Herron, who's banged up now. People, a lot of evaluators thought, well, his future in the NFL would be as an interior guy. And I think he showed us that he could handle the tackle spot. So I think I look at those two guys. Those are two pretty good guys down the offensive line, which is a strength of the team already. So yep. I think that as much as they deserve scrutiny and some criticism and questions about some of the draft classes in the last back, I think there's reason to believe these last two classes can bear a lot of fruit going forward.
I agree. All right. So last question, try to answer honestly, quick. Don't think about it. Did the Patriots make the playoffs or not?
I've got to say yes.
I mean, that's it. Yeah. You heard it here first. Bob Sozzi says the Patriots are in the playoffs. Book it right now.
well, just don't bet too much on it.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, good odds right now. I think Felger said today
don't
it's
bet,
like 5-1.
That's it. So throw a few bucks on it and see what happens. Then you can send Bob a message and tell him thank you. That's all, you know? So,
you know, I'm watching Kyler Murray right now. And, you know, you talked about this, the swing of six quarters. I mean, just that Sunday alone, for the Bills to lose that game on the play that they did.
Oh, God.
You know, we talk about all these wild card possibilities.
Yep.
The division is still very much, you know, undecided. And the Bills are in a great position. Miami's charging hard. But as you said earlier, Ryan, I think those teams got to play each other. The Patriots get two cracks at those teams, you know, one each. You know, the Bills still have to play Pittsburgh. Their schedule is still pretty strenuous going down the stretch. So I think the Patriots, you know, they're not out of it yet. They got to get to the hump and get over the hump first. They got to win these next couple, and then we'll start talking about the playoffs.
Right, exactly. So, Bob, thank you so much, man, for coming on. Really appreciate it. Before we let you leave, you got to plug yourself, you know, let everyone know where they can, you know, see you, read you, hear you, everything else.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I'm on Twitter at Bob Sozzi, S-O-C-C-I. During the week, we have a podcast on 985 The Sports Hub available on our website. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. It's the Gridiron and Beyond, not my name. I guess I had veto power over it, but that's what it's titled, the Gridiron and Beyond. And my guest this week is Jeff Benedict, who wrote the book, The Dynasty, about the Patriots championship
I'm reading
run.
That right now, Bob. I can't put it down. I tweeted out. Oh, it's so awesome. It's giving me something to do.
It's fantastic.
All this. Oh, it's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jeff is great. And we spent about an hour chatting about the process of the book and the three principals, Bob Kraft, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, of course. And, you know, that podcast comes out each week. And of course you can hear me on the games on 98.5 The Sports Hub and all of our affiliates around New England.
All right. Hey, Bob, thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much, Bob. Appreciate it again.
Pat, Ryan, you guys take care. I enjoyed it.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.